Hello, and welcome to Pearson's Rehabilitation and Therapy podcast series. In this series, we'll be discussing issues related to psychologists, occupational therapists, and speech-language pathologists who work with clients in rehabilitative or therapeutic settings. Today, we will be discussing a case study using interdisciplinary care. I'm Vanessa Berenson, and I'm here with a few folks from Pearson. Dr. Anne-Marie Kimball is a licensed psychologist, Tina Eichstadt is a licensed speech-language pathologist, and Shelley Hughes is a licensed occupational therapist. Can you each tell us a bit about your background in healthcare?
Thanks, Vanessa. This is Anne-Marie. As you said, I am a licensed clinical psychologist in Texas, and I have several years of working in healthcare settings, most of which has been working in places that included interdisciplinary care teams.
Hi, Vanessa. This is Shelley Hughes. I'm an occupational therapist. As you might gather from my accent, I'm from the UK. I'm a registered occupational therapist in the UK. I was previously a licensed occupational therapist in the US. My background is in various settings from adult rehab and working with adults with long-term conditions, and I had a lot of experience in pediatric rehabilitation as well, working in the acute care setting in large pediatric hospitals. So, there you go.
And this is Tina. Hi, everybody. My background in healthcare is with really across the continuum of care. I worked for a few years in the Mayo affiliate in Wisconsin doing acute care, subacute, neuro and trauma. We also had an outpatient practice, and we did cover the whole hospital as well. So my team there saw all the ranges of neuro events, and then sometimes we followed our patients in outpatient status as well and into the community. So that's my background in healthcare.
Thank you. Can you outline a case study for our discussion today?
Yeah, so this is Tina. So we're going to talk today about Tracy. Tracy is a 25-year-old woman who suffered a traumatic brain injury, a couple of them actually, when she was bucked from her horse after quite a traumatic ride one day in the summer. So as you can imagine, this is a pretty big event for Tracy and her family. Tracy has two children, her husband, and her parents. She lived on her parents' horse boarding and training business area. And so it's a really unique kind of setting for Tracy to live in, and then certainly the surrounding family and caregiver community for her following this injury. So, you know, with this mechanism of injury, what we learned about Tracy is that she was actually, her horse was spooked. It ran up against the building, and she suffered her first TBI with sort of that side motion hitting against the building as the horse was along the building. And then once that happened and the horse was continued to be spooked, then he bucked her. So then she went backwards off the horse and fell and hit her head a second time, and then did lose consciousness and was brought to us through the emergency department, after which the team came together and started their evaluation process. So other than the family environment, she does work part-time while she's raising the kids at home, supporting that business that her parents own. So lots of experience with horses, lots of experience with customer service, but her work is then to help the business on a day-to-day basis. So she stayed with us in her acute stay and then in the subacute rehab part of her stay as well, where the team came together as we were working to transition her home and then back into this work setting, as well as the caregiving duties in her family situation. So that's Tracy. That's a lot of what I know people see in healthcare, complex cases like this with lots of family dynamics. So that's what we bring to you today for our case for discussion.
Great. Now let's talk about your case findings.
Yes, thanks. This is Anne-Marie. Once Tracy's medical situation was stabilized, our team evaluated her and then produced a plan of care based on her assessment results, her medical records, and her medical and social family situation. As a psychologist, I assessed Tracy using the RBANS update, which led me to further assess using the WACE and WIMS, test of premorbid function, CVLT, DCAFs, and then I also assessed for depression and anxiety using the Beck anxiety inventory and the Beck depression inventory. The results of Tracy's assessment indicated she initially had some moderate deficits in memory and moderate deficits in executive functioning and also in attention and some mild deficits in the area of language. Although she demonstrated no symptoms of depression at that time, she had a mild level of symptoms of anxiety, mostly around her concerns about rehabilitation and recovery and what her injury meant for her family and her work.
Oh, thank you, Anne-Marie. That's really interesting to know. This is Shelley, once I sort of had talked and discussed with Anne-Marie around her findings, I was able to look at Tracy's, the impact of Tracy's trauma on her cognition and her mental health. As an occupational therapist, I really, really wanted to understand how we support Tracy to get back home and ultimately back to managing everyday life and work. There were several tools that I used. One of these was the TFLS, or the Texas Functional Living Scales. And this really was useful to give a high-level overview of activities of daily living and to help prioritize those first stages of intervention. Once we'd established sort of personal ADL needs, I then went on to look at instrumental ADLs and higher level skills required for returning to work. For this, a couple of tools that I had available to use, which are really good in these situations, were the test of everyday attention and the behavioral assessment of the dysexecutive syndrome, or the BADS, as we often refer to it. And these provided a really useful insight into some of the challenges which Tracy faced around planning and organization. And we also, as a team, concluded that some elements of problem solving and strategy development appeared to be intact. So, and we also found that she managed to follow stepped instructions successfully. And these skills, these strengths, really helped inform our intervention planning. One of the findings that I found to be really useful here was with the BADS. This was particularly informative. And this test helped us, it really helps look at the ability to plan and organize and problem solve. And one thing we found here was Tracy scored in the borderline range and showing some particular difficulty with tasks requiring her to plan and organize her behavior and keep track of the parameters around tasks. And there was also some evidence of impulsiveness and perhaps lack of planning or some difficulties with planning tasks. So she had more difficulty when there was no structure around the tasks she was trying to plan. So this sort of helped us as a team start to think about some of the interventions, some of the strategies that we'd employ to help Tracy with her next stage of rehabilitation.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Shelley. This is Tina. And so let me talk a little bit about the assessments that I used and then, you know, what I found that would really support what Shelley and Anne-Marie have already said. So I used the CLQT Plus, the Cognitive Linguistic Quick Test Plus. I used the Rivermead Behavioral Memory Test. I really want to dig into memory areas for Tracy. And then I also gave her the Western Aphasia Battery because of the first injury up against the house where she really hit her left temporal lobe first, I really wanted to tease out any language issues that are going on. So similar to what others have said already, these are the three tools that I really used to dig into how these deficits may play into her communication and cognition skills going forward, not only in the acute phase, but then what we can expect downstream in recovery. So similar to the others, I wanted to call out and really document some word finding that we were seeing in her conversation, really that mild aphasia that came through with that first injury and then certainly the overall trauma of the event. So that was a highlight for me, as well as really understanding where her memory was showing its gaps communicatively. And immediate versus delayed tasks, of course, had differences of performance. Her delayed tasks were more impacted. But what was most interesting for me and most helpful in assessment was to have her mom in the room, because her mom knows her so well. They live in the same space, essentially on the farm. They work together every day, so her mom would have one of the closest insights to her premorbid condition. And so with her mom in the assessment process with us, it was really interesting to watch her mom's insight as a contrast to Tracy's lack of insight. So in the executive function space, I really wanted to have mom be a proxy for Tracy's executive functioning skills, knowing already what it was going to take to get Tracy home again in her recovery process. So the highlights of Tracy's lack of executive functioning skills, Shelley mentioned lack of planning, all of those tasks that go along with those were really highlights for me in the assessment process.
And what were your recommendations of the team?
That's a really important question, Vanessa, and I think important to stress that our recommendations were made together as a team, building on the information that we'd all gleaned during the assessment process. And some of the things that we took on board when making our recommendations is that we really needed to consider the different environments in which Tracy has functioned. You know, we needed to look at a family, a cultural, a social, a community environment, and consider the means of addressing any barriers in these environments, such as, you know, do we need to make personal adaptations? How would cognitive deficits impact her ability to function in these different environments, and any existing mental health issues or any potential mental health issues, we had to think about these. And also, you know, can we employ assistive technology? Can we make modifications around physical and social environments? So really, we're kind of looking at a blend of different sort of products and services and different skill sets to kind of bring, you know, those different skill sets of different parts of the team, different team members, to identify what's the most beneficial to help Tracy achieve her desired goals. So what we really did initially was to employ some strategies that we could use across all our therapy and interventions. So we employed things like, you know, a stop and think strategy. You know, we know that Tracy had some difficulty with planning and organization, was a little impulsive. So the stop and think strategy was really useful to kind of address some of that impulsivity, address one task at a time, as opposed to switching between tasks, you know, to really, you know, get one task done before we move on to the next task, to allow more time to plan and execute tasks. And this is where Mum came in really, was really useful, because, you know, giving these strategies to other family members helped them to understand and to be, I guess, competent collaborators with Tracy to achieve the results of, to achieve the best she could do her intervention. We provided more structure. We, at times where we needed to, with some tasks, we wrote down steps. We worked through things one step at a time. We provided prompts and prompts for her to refer to her written plan to keep on task. And one thing we did all the time was practice problem solving using real life practical scenarios. And this is where Mum came in really helpful as well, to be able to talk about those, you know, scenarios at home. And we could kind of address that gap between the rehab setting and the home setting. So it was very much a collaborative effort. And I don't know, Anne-Marie, maybe you have some other things to talk that maybe I've missed there in terms of intervention strategies that you looked at using as well.
Just a little bit to add, but you detailed the very practical steps that really helped Tracy to recover to the degree that she did, the very practical things that helped her both in the therapy sessions with all of us and then also in her return to home. But in addition, from a psychological perspective, we recommended the use of RIACOM cognitive therapy system as intervention therapies, and we really focused on the areas of memory and attention and executive functioning, so helping her both retrain areas that were retrainable and to learn to do some of the things that she had previously done, but then also to develop some new compensatory strategies that allowed her to continue functioning in the areas to which she had been accustomed. And then we also reassessed for progress at regular intervals. And in addition, we continued to work with Tracy to help her manage her symptoms of anxiety, which kind of waxed and waned throughout the program as she dealt with several of her challenges. And then we continued to monitor her mental health for any increasing anxiety and watching for development of depression, which is not uncommon in a rehab setting. Tina, did I leave anything? I probably did leave out something from the speech pathologist perspective.
You know, it's great. It's great. All of this. That's the beauty of the team, right? So So the great news is, and we wanted to give everybody who's listening today a chance to hear the end of the story. And so the good news is that Tracy did go home successfully. She had just a great support system in place, and kind of here's how the story ended, or at least continued on from our intense care into more of a periodic check-in. Tracy did go home. Mom was right there, which is a great support for making sure the kids were okay. This is in the summertime, so before the kids went back to school in early elementary school that they were, Mom was a real big support to Tracy from a day-to-day basis, using the memory strategies that Shelley talked about earlier, really monitoring her mental health, as Anne-Marie talked about, as her insight grew in her recovery of the deficits that she was facing from her TBI. And so she did get home. Dad, Tracy's husband, was able to take some time off work before the kids went back to school so that he could be a support on the farm as well. And then, of course, Tracy's dad took over the lion's share of the tasks that we're all doing as a family. The summer is, of course, a very busy time for this family on the farm that they're in. So as we think about Tracy, they also engaged a volunteer program of people who boarded horses with them to really create that crowd around Tracy to make that transition home as successful as possible. And then over time, after the summer and into the fall, Tracy was able to start to pick up different pieces of her part-time work again with a lot of support and sometimes consultation with our team to make sure that those transitions slow and steady would be successful over time. So good outcome, great outcome, very much in the acute and subacute and rehab phases, but then certainly with that family support system to be able to make that successful transition to, you know, the next phase of recovery.
Thanks, Tina. Let's close this podcast with a comment from each of you on the value of this team-based approach.
Great. Thanks, Vanessa. This is Shelley. I'm going to speak for the OT perspective, if I could. I think really, as an OT, I really value working alongside my speech and language pathology colleagues. They provide great advice to help me make the most out of therapy sessions. They give me strategies that I can employ, which also further enhances their intervention as well, because we're carrying over intervention into other sessions. And it really helps reduce patient frustration and improve participation, really. And from a psych perspective, the psych really helps me understand the cognitive and the mental health impacts and how I need to apply these and understand these in the intervention I'm planning, and really be vigilant for further impact of these during, you know, the next stages, well, during this phase of recovery and beyond into the next stages. So I think it's just a really nice way of working to really appreciate each other's roles and responsibilities. And I'm sure Tina and Anne-Marie have other perspectives to add to that as well.
Yeah, I'll jump in next, Shelley. Thanks for that. I agree. One of the things I appreciate most about Shelley and other OT colleagues that I've worked with is they're always the one who says in the team meeting, who cares, right? Where's the functional component to this? Where does this matter in the patient's life? And I can always rely on my OT colleagues for that. So I value that perspective of those real-life realities so much in our OT space. And then in a, you know, equally important light, every psychologist that I've worked with has such a fantastic depth in the assessment and teasing out those cognitive structures and those pieces of skill sets that I rely on to really, really help me think deeply about what's happening in that patient's brain, and really help me think about that whole patient in all of the details of how they're functioning. And so there's just a richness there that in a team-based perspective is invaluable, because then when the decision-making is shared across those competencies of different professionals, then you know that you're really considering all the parts and pieces that you need for this particular patient. And I think that for me is the sweet spot of rehabilitation in healthcare.
And this is Anne-Marie, and I absolutely agree with everything that both of you have said. I certainly, as a psychologist, certainly appreciate the focus on function, as you mentioned, Tina, that the OT brings to the team, and also the focus on speech and language strategies and the help with task analysis from the speech-language pathologist, and so much more from both of those roles. We're leaving out that there are, of course, in most interdisciplinary teams, several other professions who are involved, and we don't mean to overlook them, but we wanted to focus today on these three roles in general. It is true that the psychology perspective on interdisciplinary care really adds a look at the mental and emotional and behavioral impacts on a person's health care and on the process and outcomes of treatment. That's called the biopsychosocial perspective, and it's really important. But it is the team approach that allows for the collaboration of all of the involved disciplines that allows for or provides such a holistic view of the patient's situation and treatment and allows us to treat that whole person collaboratively, which has a number of more positive outcomes than if we are treating separately. The research evidence shows a number of positive outcomes that have been detailed in many other places, but include a shorter length of treatment time and an increase in quality of care for the patient. So we really do value that interdisciplinary team approach.
Thank you, Tina, Anne-Marie, and Shelley for your insights. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank you for listening, and as a reminder, you can find all of our podcasts and more resources at pearsonclinical.com/rehabilitation.